Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, March the 7th, 2019, 8 a.m. in New York. It's 5 a.m. in Los Angeles. It's 1 p.m. in London. In Sydney, Australia, it's at 12 midnight. But wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I am really happy because Thursday morning means I get to talk with my friend Joel again. Hey, Joel, how you doing?
Well, things are great here. I'm actually just pulling up to my house. I dropped my son off to school. It's about 25 degrees, but nice and sunny, which is a rarity this winter in the Richmond area.
Really? No kidding. Not a lot of sun. That's surprising.
Yeah. No, it's odd. I've heard this random stat that I'll destroy in repeating it because I don't really remember it exactly.
That's
but
all right.
It's something odd. Like since September, we've had one weekend with no rain.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really something.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, that's unusual for us. Usually, it's not that much. But at the same time, I mean, there's a point to it also. It doesn't really affect my world. But it's great to be able to – you appreciate the days. The contrast allows you to appreciate the days of sun better. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that is a good way to look at it because that it's not like we want to live without the contrast. You might as well have nice contrast. That's fairly good contrast. I mean, you know, it's good for the flowers.
Exactly.
It's good for nature and so forth. So, yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. Anyway, I thought I've been doing something lately with the show that I wanted to do on our show today, which is I've been going through, kind of calling through Facebook posts in the various Law of Attraction groups, looking for interesting questions to discuss, figuring, well, you know, that first of all gives us some good topics to talk about, and secondly, after we're done with the show, I can share the link with them and maybe get more listeners that way. So it's kind of like a win-win either way I look at it. So I've got like four or five of them cold here. And by the way, anyone who's listening to the live stream, if you have a question that you want us to address, you know, by all means, type them into the comment section and we will include them. But I figure this would be kind of a fun activity to do if you're up for it. You know, so what do you think? Should we do that?
Always. Yes, I love that type of format.
Okay, well then let's give it a shot. We actually have two questions in a row that are very, very much in the same realm, in the realm of personal relationships. And so we'll start with those. Excuse me, this was posted by someone named Honor. Honor says that she wants to change the romantic partners she attracts. And she's asking for tips about that. Now, I actually responded to hers and kind of asked her to take a look at the characteristics of the people that she's already attracting and look for commonalities and see if that gives her any clues. And I haven't heard back from her, but another person named Stella responded and she said, well, I'm single and I've been wanting to attract great eligible bachelors. However, I'm mostly approached by married men. And she's thinking like, well, what the heck? How do I turn this around? So kind of broad questions, but I figured broad is a good way to start the program. So what do you think?
Well, with anything, we do have a tendency to, as they're sort of alluding to, is particularly the last comment there, we do tend to attract the same people or the same scenarios into our lives. And the bigger concept of the law of attraction, you and I have talked about this a bunch of different times, is usually a recurring theme within one's lifetime. It's a lot of people have no problem with the relationship, they have problem with the money. A lot of people have problem with the money and no problem with the relationship. And you'll see that recurring thing keeps on, whether you're attracting a lack of money or attracting the wrong person in your life. Years ago, I was running a crisis center on the weekends in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And basically I was in the middle of a lot of chaos myself. And this young lady came in. This was the adult crisis center. And I was actually the weekend crisis center for children, but they needed to fill in. So I never had done the adult center before. So I didn't know exactly how that would look. But we took I'm trying to think of the basic concept of how I had it happen. But this lady comes in. And she had been physically abused by her husband. So we were the retreat shelter and protective shelter for her and her kids. And I was very fascinated. This many years ago, Walt, very fascinated by this. And the intake packet was saying, you know, have you ever been abused before? And she was abused by her father physically. Mm. And she was abused by her first boyfriend and her second boyfriend and her first fiance, her first husband, and now this person. In fact, I said, have you ever had a relationship that you weren't abused in. I was more fat. That wasn't a question.
Yeah.
That's the thing, but I was a parent. And she said, well, I did have a couple, but they didn't last long.
Ah.
I'm like, well, wow. And so many years later, I'm able to look at that applying the law of attraction concept, whatever she was putting out there was a redundancy. It was a, it was this idea that, I am attracting the same thing, the energy. The law of attraction is about what energy we put out there. We talk about that every week.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can identify the energy that's attracting the married man, and that's such a simple, ridiculously hard answer all at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, what it is, because that's sort of the question. It's like, why, what am I putting out there? And so, first of all, just acknowledging, as weird as it sounds, just the fact that you acknowledge, yes, I'm only attracting married men, you just declared you're only attracting married men.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a piece of it. But there's also a mindset attached to that. It's what are you doing to keep getting the same results? And that's where the sort of the study of all this comes on. And are you looking for a particular thing, or are you focused on maybe one of the concepts is you're focused on the wrong type of man versus or partner versus I'm looking for a relationship, a fulfilling relationship, and not, you know, maybe the wrong parameters are being put out there. And I think that's when people come in with the relationship, believe it or not, to me, the money is a lot easier to deal with the relationship thing, because there's so much emotionality that is built over the years, and the bias and the what you're looking for and the habit of what you're attracting. You know, there's a lot of personality types that attract the same personality types. You know, it's funny that narcissists almost always invite people who are like helper personalities. And, you know, it's just a lot of that has to do with personality stuff. So it's a very difficult thing to look at individually. But it is the same energy. What energy am I putting out there that keeps attracting that same personality type or that same situation? And that's where the real study comes. So until we sit down and break down person's situation of yes, I feel this, here's what I'm looking for in a man, and then you're able to say, okay, this is where your energy is placed, and maybe this is where you're focusing in the wrong area. Not a better relationship as much as a specific trait that you don't realize you're attracted.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Because somebody who's doing it over and over again, they don't necessarily know what it is that they're doing. And so, that's confusing all by itself. And then on top of that, to be abused and treated so badly by so many people, I mean, it just wreaks havoc on you, I would imagine. I've never been through that myself, but I can only imagine what it's like.
Right. Well, and you'll see the, you know, in relationships, you'll see the, you know, I've seen it in friends. I've seen it in me. You know, the idea over the years, who I keep ending up with, or who I kept ending up with in until I really got balanced in my life. It was basically the same person. They had different names and you know, slightly different backgrounds, but at the same time, they ended up behaving the same way.
Right.
And if you're, you know, the idea of, here's a great example. Okay. My boyfriend cheated on me. My husband cheated on me. So my next relationship, I want to find somebody who's not going to cheat on me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right off the bat, right there, again, the law of attraction is all it's hearing is cheat on her, cheat on you. The fear of being cheated on is what you're attracting.
Yeah.
So most often you attract, again, with this probably consistent of every week we say this, the law of attraction has no emotion. Mm-hmm. There is no good or bad.
Right.
It just can only read what you're feeling. So the energy, the outlying energy in a lot of this is, I want somebody who is not going to cheat. And so the energy you're really putting out there is a fear of cheating, which is the emotion that the picks up on. I know that sounds very, and I'm not trying to be convoluted in my answer, but that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that is a confusing concept, because it seems like if you're putting out there that you don't want something, you shouldn't get it. But as we have come to understand and learn through studying the great teachers of the law of attraction, that's just not the way, that's not the way vibration works. That's not the way,
right.
That's not what people attract. People attract the essence of the thing or the lack of the thing. There's no opposite. That's the thing. I mean, the only real opposite is lack. And we think of the opposite of,
right.
You know, as being good or bad. You know, I like the way I'm being treated. I don't like the way I'm treated. Those are opposites. But they really aren't. What they really are two variations right. on the same thing. And that's a difficult concept.
Right. And, you know, one of the experiments that I almost always use, and I've used it on this show before, and I don't know if you're, you know, it almost applies no matter where you're at. If you're in your car or in your home, if I were to give you the directive to not look for the color red.
Yes.
Well, instantly, you are looking, and I just did it in my own house, even knowing I was going to say that. And so as you say that, you don't hear the qualifier. The subconscious mind doesn't hear the qualifier of don't. It just says red. So now right. I've attracted everything red in my house, even the smallest little notification on my Facebook thing on my phone is red. I noticed that, you know, stuff, you know, headphones that I have on the ground here that I have no idea what my son left here are red. So these are things that you have filtered for because you heard red, you didn't hear, or your subconscious doesn't respond to the don't. That's why the players in the NFL, you don't run up to the kicker and go, don't miss that kick.
Yeah, right.
Well, the kicker's on about miss the kick. It's that negative. It's whatever has been the most powerful connotation or version of your life. You eventually get to a point where you can flip it, where you're automatically attracting what you really want to attract. Mm-hmm. But it does take practice and understanding where to put your emotion and relationships. You and I have a hypothesis that, or at least I have a hypothesis that you found interesting. Everybody comes into the law of attraction, for various reasons, but I would say 95% of people come into law of attraction for one or two categories. One is relationships and the other is money.
Mm.
And I think, and again, these are real generalizations, but at least in my private practice, I can say this, the majority of, females I work with come for a relationship base, and the majority of males I work with come for a money base.
Mm.
And now there is no science behind that, but I can universally say that 95% of the people I talk with the law of attraction are one of those two categories.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes total sense. So continuing this theme, let's go on to the second question because it kind of ties in pretty directly, actually. Udara asked, hi, friends, can you please explain the ideal way to manifest my loving future husband? Appreciate your support.
And that's pretty much what we were, just like you're saying, it ties right in. Mm-hmm. It's that idea that how do I manifest anything or what am I truly looking for instead of what am I not looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Someone who, that becomes the hard piece. What am I looking for? I'm looking for someone who is loving. That's a real general category. That could be, you know, it's like, you know, I'm trying to manifest money. Well, I'm going to find a penny today. I guarantee you that. So that's manifesting money. You got to get to more of it isn't just a fulfilling relationship, someone that you can relate, someone, you know, the areas, you know, the obvious stuff, the physical attraction, all that stuff is really important. But if you really want to try to feel what it's like to have a very in-depth conversation, you know, I love to have very in-depth conversations with people about, whether it's relationships or just a real bonding of, I love to talk about the concepts of the law of attraction, metaphysics, how all this works. And while those, I find those really intriguing and incredible to have, I also don't like to have superficial conversation. So if I'm focused on, oh boy, I don't want to have that. Again, the law of attraction is picking up what I'm thinking about, what I'm feeling emotion about. Do I have to have more of a desire? I have to want a really deep conversation and an intimate bond, emotional intimate bond with a partner, more than I don't want a superficial bond.
Mm.
And that's where it comes in. Where you place your energy, the highest vibration, the vibration the law of attraction is going to respond to is, you know, if it's the fear of not having someone who's going to, I don't want the person who's going to cheat. I don't want someone who's going to pay attention to always looking in a new relationship. I don't want somebody who's going to have superficial conversations. Then that's exactly what you're attracting. So tuning in to exactly what you want, the emotion of what you want, not the description of what you want, is the key.
Yeah, it's amazing how often I've heard stories from people, including from my wife, by the way, women particularly, who have attracted their ideal mate, and they all went through the practice, not all, but a large number of them went through the practice of making a list in advance of all the characteristics of what they wanted in a mate. And then to their amazement, because they wrote that list down and put it in a drawer somewhere, years later or however much time later it was, when they finally found somebody, they pulled the list out and it was check, 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 check. I mean, every single item on the list checked off simply because they got specific about it. It's amazing how often that happens.
And that's such a great thing that when we're able to see that and see how, like you're saying, that checklist of, you know, we can manifest it, whether it's relationships or money. But again, that what we're wanting versus what we're not wanting, the energy of humans, the concept, the protective nature of thought is always been focused, and always is a broad term, but it's often focused on what we don't want. So it's natural to go, I don't want this. I do not want to be abused again.
Mm.
Well, that's the first person that's going to be calling. I have several clients, so this isn't any about one sort of copulation of clients here, but one group of young ladies that I work with tend to attract people with addiction in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the same, you know, I've had the question, why have I attracted 4 heroin addicts in a row?
Mm.
And now they didn't know they were heroin addicts when they started dating, but it turns out heroin addicts. Well, there's an energy with that. When we break down what happens when you find somebody who's not a heroin addict, then we can find out, well, they're sort of, what are the qualities in a heroin addict that attracts you? Well, they're usually very fun in the beginning. They're very spontaneous. They're very, and they describe all these things, which from an outside sort of, wow, yeah, that would describe a heroin addict. From the positive side, yeah, they certainly are planning ahead. They certainly are doing their sole focus is just about feeling good. Well, that's great to be around in the beginning. You realize they have a debilitating addiction that more than likely will kill them if they don't address it. Mm-hmm. Then it turns into a much different thing.
Yeah.
But you got to look at that energy that you're attracting, and that list is very helpful. But also with that same list, you have to be so careful not to put on the list what you don't want, mm-hmm. but what you do want, and then be able to feel the emotion attached to what you want with that. What does it feel like? It's like, I want the, when somebody says, well, I want to attract $1 million in my life, I go, what does $1 million feel like to you?
Question I've asked myself on many occasions.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there's no emotion to attachment, but you can attach to financial abundance versus the concept of a certain number. Yes, you would know what it's like to not have to work. Yes, I love the fact that I don't care what the electric bill is. I can just write the check. I'm not worried about due dates. All that's a great feeling. That's the stuff to look at. But the other side of it is such a debilitating way I don't want to have to only have just enough money to cover the month. Well, you just put that out there. So same with the relationships.
Yeah, that's it. We're in a relationship zone here, and the third question on the list is also in that same place. This is from Lisa, who asked, what's a good affirmation for when you want to correct the limiting belief of, quote, my dad left because I'm stupid, not valuable, and unlovable, unquote. And then she mentioned that he's actually passed now, but whoa, I mean, this is somebody who had a really big deal going on with her father. And I don't know if an affirmation by itself is going to do it, but what do you think? How does somebody who's got that kind of a thing going on in their background, where they really thought that their father just thought they were stupid, they're not even a good person, not valuable, not lovable. I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
It is. And one thing that I think is really important to say at this point, too, because when we get questions like this, I certainly want to be as helpful as possible. But I always want to encourage people that this type thing borders on probably needing a professional licensed therapist to look at. This is a deep underlying cause. And I never want to minimalize someone who has a trauma that is based on that. So there's some trauma work that can be done around this. And that can't be done on this show, nor do I want to represent that.
Right.
So as you're leading to, and I want to just be very clear, a mantra or a clearing thought, that's probably on the other side of therapy. Mm-hmm. So let me be clear with that, and I don't want anybody to ever suggest that we could cure something like that deep-seated trauma.
Right.
However, what we can do is we can, you know, let's assume that that trauma has been dealt with in an appropriate way with an appropriate licensed therapist, and we're able to say, okay, now moving forward, how do I change the limiting belief? Then you got to program, you know, program the emotion of the finding the emotion of, first of all, you clearly wouldn't be able to state it, hey, I'm not smart, or there's a growth mindset that I often talk about. And a growth mindset is how we view things. There's a set mindset where there's nothing moving forward versus a growth mindset where everything changes. Your brains can always evolve. Your emotions can move with it. So the excitement of, at some point, I need to move forward, and instead of assigning the value to what has happened, develop new ways of thinking. I do that with a lot of words. You know, what is the difference between failure and success and struggle, and how do you assign all those things? And so it's the same thing here. Of I need to, you know, look at where I'm at emotionally right now. How am I able to feel where that doesn't have power over me? The only power over that thought is a power that was instilled years ago. It's a historical error in your thinking. You've been programmed with a historical error of what you interpreted. I don't know what was going on with your father or what he was saying or what he was dealing with, so I won't try to handle that.
Right.
But what I will say is the information you received from him, whether it was intended, however it was intended by him, you have received the information as wrong. You've misinterpreted it, because regardless of what somebody else dictates to you, you are not the things that somebody else says. You're the things you choose to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old saying that it's not what they call you; it's what you choose to respond to.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's been people in your life, and I certainly hope so, that have told you how incredible, you know, how resilient you are. You're still here in this world. You're still battling. You're still there. All that stuff is a sign of strength. All the people, who do you choose to listen to? The person who's delivered a negative message, or the people around you, or yourself who's delivering a positive message?
Mm-hmm.
The bonds of someone else's opinion can be broken when you no longer give value to that. It's like when I was, now this really irritates me, Walt, and it's a little humor to lighten it up a little bit.
Okay.
When I was a child, we had nine planets. Pluto was a planet.
That's true.
Somewhere along the way, one of our wise assigners of planets decided, you know, you're not good enough, Pluto. You don't meet any of our qualities. You're a subplanet now?
Yeah, although there's also a movement back to move them back to a planet, so that's a good thing, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, thank goodness. Pluto did nothing to not deserve to be a planet, okay?
Right.
And thank goodness they did that. So somebody along the way decided, and that's a perfect, I'm really glad that. Okay, Pluto's a planet. Now, Pluto's not a planet. Apparently, Pluto's going to be a planet again. So what happened to Pluto? Nothing. Pluto's still there. Last I checked, it's still there.
Yeah.
Pluto has not changed. It's the description of Pluto that changed.
Right.
We are incredible creatures instilled with whatever we have going on. We have what people perceive as good. We have what people perceive as bad. It's what we choose to focus on, where our energy is choosing. That matters. And by listening to someone else's narrative in our life is living a curse versus realizing you have the chain of that, and you can redo that narrative at any given time, at any given moment, by changing your perspective and that inner dialogue. And that does take work. But if you really unprogram it, not saying I'm not stupid, that isn't reprogramming. I am clearly a survivor. I'm clearly resilient. I clearly am not, I'm clearly have great intelligence. I'm able to do, and intelligence is always defined, you know, Einstein said, somebody said, you can't define the intelligence of a fish by its ability to climb a tree. So within the abilities of us to discuss the different, where we're at, no one else gets to dictate to who you are. When I was a child, I have ADHD. I still have it. But when I was told that I had, at first, before there was any, you know, Joel has a very high IQ, but he doesn't perform well in school. So he's lazy. Joel's lazy.
Oh boy.
Joel's lazy. Well, my mom and dad, we go to all these conferences. You know, I'm sitting here with a high IQ, but I'm getting D's, C's and D's in school, an occasional F. Well, I'm not doing homework. I don't care. I'm not studying, but I'm buying into the fact it's lazy. So I become lazier in my thinking. Yes, I'm lazy. Then I'm of low character. I'm not motivated. Well, that became my reality for a long time. So I performed even to a less higher standard than, you know, than what for there. I was reading a quote, by a lady who wrote a book about the growth mindset. And she said there's somewhere, some country or some county, they did away with the giving people F's, is the grade letter A, B, C, D, and F. They did away with that. And the instead of F, they gave them the category of NY, which stood for not yet.
Okay.
And it sounds silly, but that did change the perspective. You didn't fail. You just don't have it yet. You will get it. That gives a more motivational type thing. And a lot of people say, well, you're worried about the word. That's too soft. Your inner dialogue is you. Your inner dialogue and the words and how you assign that is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important to understand that. You get to program that in you.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. So getting back to Lisa then, the answer for Lisa is she needs to get therapeutic help to root out whatever that situation was with her father. But then after she's successfully done that with a professional therapist, then the next step is, yes, she can do some things. And my impression is that it's not going to be hard for her to figure out at that point. I mean, you've told stories in your own life about, you know, how you had a number of things you had to deal with that were pretty severe situations. And once you were able to work through the root causes of them, you kind of catapulted. It's not like you were being held back. You know, coming up with an affirmation was not really difficult.
No, the affirmation piece is easier. It's easy. I won't even do it easier. It's easy after you deal with the stuff. There's clearly a lot of emotion there that's much deeper than our show.
Right.
That really is important, but it is very doable. I have great respect for somebody on that journey, but I really encourage everyone who may be relating to the question, you know, that you can't. Until you fix the broken pieces inside, the law of attraction can be it's still at work, it's still at play, but you're using a false narrative that's been instilled a long time ago as a baseline of thinking, so you're never able to accurately tune into the emotion, the vibration we're seeking. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like an example. If I were to take a radio and I take the knob off of it and it didn't have and the digital display was burned out, I would have to just keep clicking and clicking and clicking and listening to each station to see if I were tuned in right. And, you know, I would not have enough information to tune in correctly because I don't have my precision dial in yet. Whereas I have, you know, in my car, I can go to 92.7 or whatever I need to get to exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the law of attraction responds the same way. So getting that help to sort of fix that, you know, inappropriate or that stuff that, well, everything that you've been programmed, whether it's your father, which has a lot of power, I understand that, or anyone else, that's the piece you got to fix first and understand that. Then after that, your manifestation will just be boom. Your mantra will be boom. I got this. It'll be great.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a film that came out within the last few years. I'm not sure exactly when it came out, about Fred Rogers, who created on PBS the television show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And ran for quite a few years on that network. Rogers was really kind of a groundbreaker because he was one of the very first people to recognize and understand the specific, I don't want to say issues because that starts to sound like the abuse side, although that can be part of it too. The specific needs that kids have, the need to be recognized, the need to be loved, the need to understand that they're not inferior. They're just as special as everybody else. They're good people. They're worthy of love just the way they are. They don't have to change themselves into somebody else in order to be loved. That, you know, that kids are just special just because of who they are. And that was a revolutionary message to be giving out at that time, particularly since that's not what most children's programming was all about. One of the interesting things that came out of that film, and it came in toward the end of the film, was that there was a lot of pushback against Fred Rogers, saying that he was actually doing a disservice to kids because, in the view of the people who were criticizing him, he was telling kids that they should feel entitled, that telling kids that they are special just because of who they are is a teaching of entitlement. And I found that to be not only fascinating, but a little bit alarming, because I recognized that that is, I wouldn't say it's a common belief in that the majority of people believe that. I don't think the majority of people believe that, but it's prevalent. There are a number of people who just, who have that kind of a mindset. And I just wondered if you could kind of comment on that for a moment, you know, from your perspective. What do you think about that?
Well, and part of what I'm hoping that we can evolve to, and again, this is my individual perspective, there is a fine line. I do think that what happens is people mistake what you just said. There's learned resilience and there's learned helplessness. Mm. When you tell someone that, you're special and you're perfect as you are, that's a great message until it's perceived as, okay, well, it's not your fault. You didn't do this right, or you failed. Don't worry. Don't try again because you're perfect as you are. That's sometimes a message that's delivered when you have there's a difference between being a 6-year-old on your very first soccer team and getting a trophy because you participated, and being 13 years old and never winning a soccer game and still getting a trophy. You know, there is a difference in what message is being delivered. So the learned resilience model says you're absolutely perfect as you are, but being perfect means all of us will have challenges and make mistakes, and you will have a learned resilience by not giving up. You will make mistakes. You're still perfect. You're perfect as you are. But your growth will require struggle. There's also the message that's often delivered that you're perfect and you don't need to try. It isn't about changing who you are, but your effort and energy in life is about learning and struggle and moving forward. I have many of my clients, and I'll keep it really generic so I don't identify anyone that may be listening.
Right, right.
A lot of my clients are from upper middle class to very wealthy people, and they will often have, I have a phenomenon, and it's usually the male children. Usually they're superstar athletes in high school. They go to the best private schools. One young man said, you know, the private school I went to, it's not even possible to fail. I mean, the parents are paying $50,000 a year for them to go. They're not going to give C's and B's. So the teachers basically are told these kids are getting A's. Now, there's a great education offered, but an A and B, everybody's going to college, everybody's going to good colleges. So they're not really challenged, and they're playing, you know, they're doing all the stuff. So then they go to college real life where the professor is like, you didn't do this at all, or you didn't do it right, or you're wrong in your thinking. Mm-hmm. They're literally so emotionally fragile that they're blown away. I have several clients that have left college after their first semester because of their inability to handle criticism or struggle at all.
Mm.
Some of them have never gone back. I know one young man that's been in his parents' basement for 9 years and is stuck. He's just stuck. And he has 1 year of college, and it blew him away. So the reason I tell this story, there is a dialogue wall, but it's not as simple as, well, you're absolutely perfect and you require no effort. I'm very much, we all came here to do effort. We all came here to work. You have different abilities. We're all perfect in our ability, but the idea that we're not here to strive and move forward and grow, to me, that's where the message gets convoluted. And I think it's a little more complicated, at least from my perspective, of, yes, I think that message is, and Mr. Rogers was about, yes, do good, try, go. You have people from you know, really, really rough upbringing, you know, and not a lot of support, not a lot of family support, being very poor. I've had several kids I worked with in foster care that have become incredibly resilient, productive, super successful people in their adulthood. And their learned resilience from their experience of foster care is their strength. And I've also seen the exact opposite where they were so defeated by their childhood, they never tried.
Mm.
And that's the big difference.
That's a huge difference, yeah. It's a very interesting topic. There's a lot of ways, I think, to go after that one, probably longer than we can do with a Q&A, so maybe something to carry on another day. The one thought I wanted to add to what you were describing, I thought your description was brilliant. The one thought that I want to add is, I think there's a problem with the concept of perfection. And that problem is, it can be perceived one of two ways. Like you said, you're just fine the way you are, or it could mean you have to do everything perfectly. And the idea of doing everything perfectly is you have to do it in what is, quote, the right way, unquote, every time. Now, what's the right way? Well, actually, it turns out the right way is very vague and differs from person to person because everybody has a different idea of what the right way is. So you're basically running against a moving target that you can never catch up to. And as a result, you end up, people, I've done this with myself, I know a lot of people have done this, they put themselves into the mental space of saying, I can't ever get it right. Because it never comes out exactly the way it was originally intended to come out. The path varies, you know. I end up going in the wrong direction for a while, and then I end up producing the wrong result for a while. And so, you know, I'm not perfect, and that lack of perfection is holding me back. That's a crazy thing. You're basically saying life has to always go the way it's mapped out, which is nuts. That's not the way life goes.
Here's a great example that I use for many scenarios, but this analogy covers it really well. You know, Walt, I want you to meet me tomorrow, and we're going to go watch a spring training game in Tampa, Florida, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I have tickets at the Yankees spring training facility in Tampa.
Okay.
Meet me there tomorrow. Well, I don't care how you get there, Walt.
Right.
You can leave now and maybe make it driving. I doubt it, but maybe. You could hop on a plane, hop on a train. You could do whatever you and then say you decided to drive. You might have time to get there. You do have time to get there, actually. I'm looking. I don't care. You could go straight down 95 from where you're at, and you could then cut over on I-4.
Mm-hmm.
You can cut over some point and go down 75. You could petty corner across and meet a bunch of different little interstates to get you where you need to go. Or you take a bunch of macro.
Yep.
My point is, getting to Tampa is the goal. And when you get there, do I focus on the fact you achieved the goal of meeting me there, or do I get stuck on the path that you took? And that's the idea. If you got there, to me, you did it.
Right.
Or am I stuck with there? And that's sort of the idea. Perfection, when I say you're perfectly you, you're perfectly you, flawed and complicated. That's you. That's the point, because we need people with different ways to approach things.
Mm.
It doesn't work. We don't have that. What's lost in this, and I won't, I almost got a political debate, but I won't. What is lost in today's thinking? It is our diversity. It is our different way of thinking. Philosophy is obnoxious to hardcore scientists. It drives them crazy.
Yeah.
But philosophy combined with hardcore science has made all our discoveries in the world.
Mm.
You have to have somebody think about it before the scientists can start proving it or disproving it.
Right.
And that leads to more discovery. There's a yin and a yang, whatever you want to call it. And so within us, you aren't a mistake. It's believing that you have to do it a certain way or get to a certain point that is what does it. And that's where the difference is. It's not perfection. And you said it so well. I've really complicated it nicely there. you have said that you said it perfectly. It isn't about doing it perfectly. It's about understanding you're perfect in how you're going to do it. New things are developed by the different way. When I manage companies, I'm very, very clear. I will set a goal. I will describe my goal, and then I will tell you to go do your goal. I hired you to figure out how to get me there.
Right.
That's what I've hired you for.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come to me, well, how do you want me to do it? I don't care. Do it. And then present with me. Now, if I don't like how, if it doesn't meet compliance or whatever the boundaries of my, then we have to look at all that. But just the general conception of that. When I go do consulting, Walt, you've heard me say this before, I'll go to a treatment center that's trying to implement new programs, and they've been meeting for 3 months on how to do that. I walk in and implement the program that day.
Yep.
And then I fix it. Then I fix what's wrong. You're stuck with over-analysis, and we do that. So lost in a lot of this time, the idea that telling a kid, oh, well, there's a difference between, yes, you're totally flawed, you're this, you're wrong, versus, okay, I need you to accomplish this, use your unique skill set to get there, and, one of the arguments is, I just need to get there. I need to quit learning being taught what to learn and be taught how to think.
Mm.
That's what's wrong with a lot. We were taught what to learn versus how to think.
Yeah.
And that's what's missed a lot. And I think we are evolving beyond that, but I'm very much a learned resilience guy. But it isn't about life not having hard knocks. It isn't about struggle. Struggle is necessary. It's important. It's growth. The very birth of a baby is extreme struggle for two people.
Mm,
you know,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a lot of struggle there. Yeah, a lot of resistance, so to speak, coming out, and there's a lot of struggle. We are born into struggle. And struggle is the greatest growth mechanism that we have. But understanding the struggle and not looking at it as such a negative, that's what the law of attraction can be such a great benefit.
Yeah, that's true. That's very good. We have actually a live stream listener question, and it kind of takes us out of our pattern here a little bit, but well, maybe it doesn't. In some ways it does, in some ways it doesn't. But I wanted to make sure we answered it. Siraj was asking, he says he's asking this just out of curiosity, do you believe in the daily horoscope? And before you even give your answer, my answer is going to be no, I don't. I think that's actually just more about, trying to sell advertising in a publication. So I pay no attention to it at all. Now, I'll also throw in the caveat. I have a number of friends who are very much into astrology, and some of them they have found ways to use astrology in their understanding of law of attraction that's very helpful to them. But even them, I don't know any of them who actually reads a daily horoscope and gets something out of it. They don't even look at it that way. So that's my answer. But what's your answer, Tim, Joel? Do you believe in a daily horoscope?
Well, if I do, I'm giving it power. I mean, a daily horoscope is something that there's been multiple studies. One of my favorite ones was where they had a class full of people, and they had everybody fill in your exact date of birth, where you were born, time zone, and he created a horoscope for each horoscope in the room.
Mm.
And he said, read your horoscope silently, and how many people feel it describes them.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the class raised their hand and said, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, now hand your horoscope to the person to your side. It's the exact same horoscope for everybody in the room. It was a general descriptive.
Right.
I don't claim to have, the origins or the knowledge. I'm not saying that the positioning of the planet, I understand we're in the retrograde of, if somebody's in retrograde or Mercury,
Mercury
I don't know
usually,
how
yeah.
all that works. Mercury, poor Mercury. Why in Pluto? We need to get back to Pluto. I like Pluto so much. What? Pluto needs to be a retrograde occasion. That would be helpful. But the idea that horoscope, it's like anything else. You look at it, you read it, and if it says, be careful today, you're going to have a bad day. Yeah, it's like Friday the 13th. Do I believe in Friday the 13th having an effect on? Actually, I really do, Walt. Friday the 13th are awesome days for me. I've had some great news.
I love it.
So I really believe that's not part of my spiel here. That's what I really, I've had probably 20 events in my life that happened great on Friday the 13th.
No kidding.
And so when I see Friday the 13th coming up, I'm like, oh, thank goodness, a good day. A full moon Friday the 13th. Wow, that's a double whammy. That's a great thing. Now, to be honest with you, there's nothing going on except I believe it's going to be there. So do I believe in horoscopes? Sort of. Only because if you choose to give them value or energy, they can have an effect on what you're believing. Mm. But is there anything tangible in that? You know, if I were to do your horoscope every day and talk what a great day you're going to have, and here's, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, yes, it could support that. But nobody is really sitting there and being able to understand exactly how the positioning of the planets and all that is going to affect who you are. I do think that, you know, the position of the moon, I used to run group homes for kids a long time ago. I mean, we have a full moon. I don't know how to describe it, but there were different behaviors on the full moon, and they didn't even know it was going to be a full moon. So I don't know. I can't explain all of it, but horoscopes in general, they can be a fun thing to read, but at the same time, I see them having minimally a placebo type effect. If you really believe something bad is going to happen, yeah, okay, so it's a really good chance something bad's going to happen today. Mm-hmm. And so I've never been able to equate it, but I agree more with your statement and having respect for anyone else's opinion. That's not my area of expertise, but I've never placed any value on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I know many people who do use, the concepts of astrology quite effectively. I know coaches who do that.
Right.
You know, so it definitely has value to people. In fact, just yesterday we were reading from Neville Goddard. Neville Goddard was talking about, this is really interesting. Neville, of course, has a very different take on Christianity. He was very devout as a Christian, but his take on the Christian messages was quite different from what the church traditionally teaches. And yesterday we were discussing his view of Christmas and the Christmas story and the Easter story. And his take was really fascinating. One of the most interesting parts is he gave an explanation that I think I may have heard at one point, but it kind of, you know, slipped away in the back of my head, about why it is that Easter always falls on a different day every year. And the reason he gave was astrology, which was really interesting. I'd never heard that one, you know, explained that clearly in any kind of a public setting that I knew about. So, I mean, is it something that the Catholic Church would buy into? Probably not. But nevertheless, it was interesting. You know, the idea is that they changed the, I don't remember the exact formula, but they changed the day of Easter every year based on when certain astrological signs come into alignment. And I thought, that's fascinating. Okay. Why not?
It really is. Yeah. It is.
So, okay, now we got a really long question here. This is one I've been kind of hanging on to. This is from Sarah, and she gave a very detailed question here. So let me read it to you. She says, okay, I need some guidance. If anyone is willing to provide some, that would be amazing. Anything that can help steer me in the right direction is greatly appreciated. So here it goes. I'm a super giving person. I've had to do some hefty personal boundary work over the course of my life to not be a forever doormat or a victim. I'm always there to help in any way I can, and rarely do I ever say no. So much so that it leaves me feeling like I'm shorting my partner or our children. Not only do these acts of giving cost mass amounts of time, they somehow seem to end up costing me hundreds of dollars, too. I've never had a problem doing this, but I just feel like the same people keep asking for favors. If I don't give to these people, I'm made to feel guilty, as in I have so much freedom of time and resources and I don't give enough. However, I've been bottomed out by this more than a few times, with sleepless nights to stay up driving with little or no thanks and basically putting a drain on my bank account and spending the time with my partner and my children. I'm not sure what to do. This came to me again as I thought I had found the solution. However, someone just posted about giving, and the reference was to the movie The Secret, but I don't know what to do. Here's the affirmation I've been practicing. She says, I give of myself to others freely and selflessly. Now is the time for me to give to myself freely and selflessly. I deserve my happiness, I deserve my financial freedom, and I deserve my freedom of time to spend as I wish. I will no longer be made to feel guilty because I have and don't give. I have to and do give to everyone. Now I'm at the top of the list, guilt-free. So that's the affirmation she's been working with. So a lot going on there to work with. What do you think? What can we tell to Sarah?
Well, I love her affirmation. Learning to say no is the most valuable thing you can do. When you're giving, you see the conflicting emotion. I appreciate her mentioning the emotion. when I give and I get little thanks and I feel guilty if I don't. And there's all that emotional is toward the negative. All the emotion is, you know, the idea that I give freely is not intended for someone to take advantage of me. That's not or place my family's stuff in jeopardy or my wealth in jeopardy or my happiness in jeopardy. And so giving freely is not as simple as just, I'm going to give to the point that it costs me my happiness, because then the law of attraction responded to the lack of happiness. And again, giving is something that is going to be done. Anybody that's expecting it, anybody that's making you feel guilty, anybody that's doing that to you, or they can't do that to you. Anybody that's you're allowing to do that to you, you need to take back, or I always suggest your affirmation is on point, but the most freeing and amazing thing to be able to tell someone is no, and it'd be a complete sentence with no qualifiers. Mm. No, with a period.
Yeah.
It's empowering. And, you know, I don't need to explain. I don't need to debate. I don't need to justify my decision. The answer is no. And that is so hard for most people to do, but it's an incredibly freeing experience when you can do that. You want to help. You want to be able to. However, when boundaries are crossed, you're losing sleep, you're spending hundreds of dollars, and people are, and I don't know the scenario, but if people are constantly in need and constantly being bailed out, sometimes the best thing you can do is tell them no. So they're able to deal with it themselves. So they're forced to come up with a solution themselves. Continuously doing stuff for people, you disable them. You're harmful to them. You're not giving to them. You're taking away their ability to do it themselves often. So you got to look at reframing that. If you were to, I think she mentioned she had children.
Right.
If you have a 2-year-old or a 1-year-old, whenever kids start to walk, if you were to not allow that child to fall, stand up, walk, you just keep crawling. Just stop. I don't want you to fall. They'll never learn to walk. Yeah. Same thing here. You can help, but sometimes when you become so helpful, you debilitate. You're causing stress and anxiety in your life. Helping when it's causing you stress, anxiety, and guilt in any level that's not helping. That's not helping you. One of the things that I always start with, when I'm working with anyone is when you're on an airplane, they tell you if you're traveling with a small child and we lose cabin pressure, and the masks come down, you put the mask on yourself first and the child second. Not because we're being cruel, but an unconscious you is not going to be able to protect your child. Right. If the child goes unconscious for a second, you can put the mask on and everything's going to be okay. So really important to understand placing you and your family's needs first. It's about that. And being able to help within strict boundaries. I really, and sometimes it takes a while. That's misinterpreted a lot. You know, I stopped at, I passed this lady on my way to and from my office every day. She's sitting there standing there with a sign, disabled and need food. And I see her there, and it's very sad to see her there every day. And so, I have in the beginning gave her some money. I didn't know her situation. But after 5 years of passing her every day, I'm going, okay, now let's see what's going on. So I have some connections that I know pretty well with mental health services and places she could go for homeless people and really help launch her. There's several programs. So I stopped and said, look, why don't you get your stuff, put it in the back of my truck. I've already talked to this program, and you could go live there. They'll help you get a job. They'll help. And she's looking at me like I'm absolutely crazy. Mm. And I said, you can get off the street. And she says, I make $300 a day. I said, okay, but you're begging on the street. I make $300 a day. What job is going to pay me $300 a day? Mm. So you're saying you really don't need help?
Yeah, right.
She goes, no, I make $300 a day. And I'm like, okay. And so, so helping her is actually harming her. Mm-hmm. Helping her is actually keeping her stuck, in the national forest. It says, please don't feed the bears because they come dependent on you feeding them. Mm-hmm. They need to know how to hunt. They know how to get their own food. There's multiple examples in human and nature. And it's just one of these things that taking care of ourselves and not putting our well-being at risk in the need to help other people. There should be zero guilt. There should be empowerment in saying no. There should be no sleepless night. I need to feel good about this. And anybody that makes you feel guilty, and this is a bold statement, whether it's your old family or not, by adjusting or teaching them how to treat you, it is very important. Years ago, my mother, and she had a rough childhood with an alcoholic father, and she was her and I were having a discussion. She was upset by one of her family members said something that hurt her feelings. And she said, well, I'm tired of being a doormat to everyone. And my answer to her really angered her. I said, you can only be a doormat if you're choosing to lay on the floor. So anyway, coming from your son, never taken very well. So we had to deal with the aftermath of that statement. But
eventually, therapy after eventually, that one.
After we got through that initial phase of her displeasure with that statement, she realized what I was saying was accurate. You keep playing roles. There is a concept that I would always encourage people to look at. While it's not directly law of attraction, you can see how it evolved. It's an old psychological model called the drama triangle. Mm. And it talks about the position of being a victim, the helper, or the perpetrator, and how we can often be all three in relationships. When you're in a drama triangle with these people, that you're helping, and they're the victim and you're the helper, and then when they don't thank you or give you praise or what have you, you don't feel good about doing it, then you're the one that's been taken advantage of. So you see playing all three positions there. And really important to understand, but it's a good question, and you never feel guilty about no. No is the empowering.
I love the way you tie that together too, because I can see somebody who has this kind of a background where they're constantly helping people. They haven't really learned how to say no. And I can imagine them the first time saying to themselves, okay, well, I got to say no. And it's just too overwhelming because it just flies in the face of what their behavior has been. But then they remember what you talked about, how if you don't say no, you're actually harming somebody. You're actually preventing them from having the opportunity to struggle through to their own thing that they need to do. And maybe that, maybe that just might be enough to help her recognize, you know, maybe I do need to say no. I'm hopeful that that's what the case is going to be. But I love the example because it kind of takes the onus off of, oh, God, I don't know if I can say no.
Yeah. One of the hardest things my parents ever had to do, and I'll do this many years ago, I was dealing in the depths of a really bad addiction. Mm-hmm. And addiction to gambling. I was doing illegal acts to fund my gambling.
Right.
Really not in a good place. They bailed me out multiple times to keep me out of trouble. Mm-hmm. And I kept doing it. It got so bad to the point, they told me the last time they bailed me out, they're not going to do it anymore. And I'm like, yeah, great. Well, I went to work for this company, and I didn't intend to steal, but of course I ended up stealing to get money to gamble. That's what I'm always doing. Mm-hmm. And I eventually was caught. I actually turned myself in, but I got tired of doing it. Mm-hmm. I went to jail, and while I was in jail, I called my mom and said, you know, it's only $5,000. If you pay that, I won't have a felony. And I can get out, and I've really learned my lesson. And her and my dad said, no, we've tried all that before. Let's see what this felony does for you.
Mm.
Now, as a parent, there's one of the hardest things you could ever say.
Yeah.
As I was furious with them for a year. Mm-hmm. I was furious. My dad and I didn't speak for a year.
Wow.
However, nobody's ever done me a greater service than give me that no, because I fought back from that moment, Walt. I turned my life around. Everything I had today pivots from that moment.
Wow.
It was the most empowering no in my life. Now, I didn't feel empowered. It kicked my ass early, but I rose from that, and I have nothing today that I don't owe to my parents' incredible courage of using no and making me struggle and fight and claw, and it wasn't easy. It was ugly. But I'm so grateful they did that.
That's fantastic. Wow. And that pretty much brings us to the end of the hour. Nasha asked a question that we just don't have time to get to about, she was piggybacking on Suraj's question. She says, how about tarot card readers and physics? That could probably take an entire show to discuss that one. But I'll try to give you an answer in the comments section after we're done here, Nasha. So you're not forgotten. It's just we ran out of time. Can't really do it. But Joel, thank you. I mean, some of those answers you gave today were among the best you've ever given. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Glad to do it, Walt. Great to talk to you, my friend.
Great to talk with you, too. Thanks to our live stream listeners and to our regular podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.